From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of June, 2026. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jim McCormick. He's with AgMarket.net. Matt Bennett is out of the office for the afternoon. We'll turn our attention to the weather forecast along the way with Mike Tenor. He's at T-Storm Weather, and we'll hear about next week's Dudley Smith Farm Field Day. It'll happen outside of Pena and Taylorville. You'll want to join us on that Wednesday, the 17th. More details from Travis Mateer on it. And Gary Schnitke will join us as well. He and I and Laura Gentry from the Illinois Corn Growers Association hosted a webinar this morning on the data coming out of the PCM project and what it says about nitrogen applications and the economics of different tillage passes. It's really interesting. You want to stay with us for that. And then look that up as well online at youtube.com/@farmdoc. But first, stay with us for the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Jim, USDA released the June WASDE or World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates earlier today. Not many changes. Let's start with wheat, though, because the big change there was actually the season's average cash price. It did drop yield by half a bushel, but 50 cents down from $6.50 to $6. What'd you make of that change?
Well, I think it's definitely a little bit disappointing to see it drop, Todd. But I mean, I think what it shows you, though, is the world supply is plentiful. The world supplies were raised 1.7 million metric tons despite the cut in the U.S. They raised the Russia crop. And, you know, the fact of the matter is wheat is a world market. We don't export a lot of wheat on the world market, but we price it on the world market. So, you know, the USDA is obviously reflecting the plentiful supply in the world, hence the reason they dropped the price, even though supply domestically is dropping.
What did USDA do with the corn supply and demand table today?
Well, if you look at it, they made a slight revision in the old crop corn. They increased imports by about 3 million, a little bit of accounting. And then they essentially raised exports 25 million, which we thought was well needed. And actually, I think they're probably going to have to raise it some more, but they offset it by lowering the ethanol by 25 million. So you got pretty much a net change. So in general, the domestic side was relatively muted, Todd. But what I think the market reacted to was kind of like the wheat. The global supply raised up 3.7 million metric tons to 281.2. A bearish revision by all accounts. The surprise, they did raise India's production on raising yield as well as acres. The Argentina, the Brazilian crop also increased. So that seemed to affect the corn market more than anything else, with the wheat, you know, number being a little bit negative on the world side, but just the overall supply of the world as the market's trying to get competitively priced or stay competitively priced.
Walk me through the WASDE for the soybean complex.
On the soybean side of the equation, what we did with that was no adjustments for the new crop. On the old crop, they lowered exports as anticipated. Exports have been a little bit disappointed by 20 million. They offset it with a phenomenal crush we're seeing in for the beans. They raised the grind by 20 million, in essence, keeping the carryout unchanged. On the world front, when you look at what they did with the world, ending stocks were rise slightly to 124.9. Argentina's production was revised up 2 million metric tons to 50, a slight increase from their higher beginning stocks. So a little bit negative on the world supply for beans, hence probably a little bit of pressure on the bean market as well today.
I'd like to address a policy issue. Yesterday, the president mentioned that he is inclined not to renew the USMCA. That would be a big deal for agriculture, and not in a good way. How did the trade take it? It appears in stride to me.
Well, in general, I think you said it best. I think the trade kind of took it in stride. The negotiations are going on. President Trump likes to tweet and talk about stuff as he tries to mold the negotiations, which way they're going to go. I know Mexico's got a problem with some of the deal right now. They're one of their big complaints is we're tariffing their car imports at a higher rate than we're tariffing imports, I believe, from South Korea and Japan. They're not happy about it. these negotiations are going to be very, very tough. And it's something, if you're involved in the agricultural community, I think you need to be worried about, because it's a situation that you may not have a short-term, pivot. In essence, Mexico's been buying a lot of corn, and they're going to continue to buy a lot of corn. But if you get this situation where you get these trade agreements too ugly, then you're going to get Mexico to try to find a way to source corn some other way. We've seen that with China. Look what happened. I mean, China, the first Trump administration, we had that nasty trade war, and China really accelerated their buying of South America products, and they just continue to do it. Because the hard part is, once you lose that market share, that person that took over that old market share, Todd, he does not want to give that business back up, and you've got to fight to get it back. So hopefully we can get this agreement made whole. And, what we saw from President Trump was more just posturing in front of the actual negotiations.
Did today fundamentally, the WASD that is, change the marketplace for you at all?
It didn't really change it on the fundamental side. On the technical side, I'm definitely a little bit disappointed with it. I mean, the new crop corn, we have a settlement price, but we got a last trade here at 439. You are taking out the low scored on Sunday night, but more importantly, you're going to close, settle below the low made on this contract month back in August. So technically, that's not a very good sign. On the beans, they did try to hold some technical support on the beans. So we're technically trying to hold the beans. The corn is really getting ugly. It is oversold. To see these July beans trade at 411 is a little bit disappointing. I believe there is a gap on the chart right around that 404 and a quarter cent on a weekly continuous gap. That hopefully maybe is where the July corn's going to try to catch. We've still got a long summer to go. We've got a lot of rain coming through. We'll see what's going on Iran. President Trump today said he halted some attacks he had ordered. There's optimism again that we are very close to a peace deal. The stock market likes that news. It's up over 700 points on the Dow. The crude oil is down $2 on positive news from there. But we'll see how that plays out. If that would derail, Todd, and the crude oil market would start to warm again, that could provide some support to the energy markets as well as the grain markets.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome, Jim. That's Jim McCormick with AgMarket.net. By the way, December corn settled at 439.5, down 7.25. November at 11.34, and the soybeans down 4.5 cents. We're now joined by Travis Mateer. He's a beef cattle specialist for University of Illinois Extension, but helps to put together a program at the Dudley Smith Farm. That's near Pena in Illinois, kind of the Taylorville-Pena area. And each year, it is a unique function for both beef producers and mostly for row crop farmers. I think that's an interesting function as it's related to your position. You're going to talk about, I think, cover crops, but there are a whole bunch of other folks from crop sciences here on campus that are on board for this day. It is on June the 17th.
Yeah, we're, the Dudley Smith Farm is kind of unique. It's an option for our stakeholders to come visit with us, right, and smack dab the center part of the state. And we're bringing the big names in. We're bringing Dr. Andrew Margnot. We're bringing in Dr. Oliveira, Dr. Prezafontes, and Dr. Ping. They're all going to talk through their research. I'll be on the program as well. But we've got a really good lineup of topics. We're focusing a little more on nutrients, water, water quality, water loss, N and P, fertility. Everybody's paying attention to fertilizer prices right now. These are big time topics with the research behind them. And I think it's this year going to be a unique opportunity. We're going to do a guided tour. And so it'll be an opportunity for folks to come. And you're going to see actually collecting the measures. You're going to kind of see the behind the scenes of the research that happens there. And then just have that opportunity to be face-to-face, one-on-one, boots-to-boots with our researchers and have those conversations firsthand. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity. The weather's supposed to be really good. Yeah, come out and join us for what I think is a pretty unique opportunity.
If you'd like more information on this, you can always look in the calendar at willag.org on June the 17th. There's a link there to all the details, or you can just search Dudley Smith Farm Field Day, Illinois extension, and it should pop up. Hey, thank you much, Travis. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Earlier today, Gary Schnitke, Laura Gentry, and I, Laura, with the Illinois Corn Growers Association, Gary and myself, of course, with University of Illinois and Extension, sat down for a webinar that you can watch this afternoon or anytime you'd like on YouTube at youtube.com/@farmdoc, looking at 10 or 11 years of data collected from the PCM project, that's Precision Conservation Management, related to inputs, particularly nitrogen, and what you can learn about the different kinds of tillage systems and how those inputs are impacted by them and what kinds of management that producers are using. Hey, Gary, thank you for being here. Interesting set of discussions today that farmers can take a look at anytime they'd like. What are some of the key takeaways?
Yeah, but when we have 11 years of data now, it's rather consistent over this entire period. From a tillage standpoint, we find that no-till and one-pass light systems are no-tills, obviously no-tillage pass, one pass is one pass of a tillage system, almost always are more profitable than our more extensive systems that use more tillage. That is primarily because of the higher cost associated with tillage associated with those systems, and that tillage cost adds up. That is the same as always. The other thing that we note is that having nitrogen rates close to the MRTN, which is 151 to 200 pounds per acre, is the most profitable place to be consistently. There's some years when it isn't, but you're consistently, that is the right place to be. And here's the new thing that we're seeing more and more of, is that if you're a one-pass light system and no-till, you're also more likely to have lower nitrogen rates. So it's, when we're looking at some of these systems, part of what's going on is that if you tend to be a quote-unquote lower input tillage, you also tend to be a lower input with nitrogen as well, and that results in more profitability.
In this case, you have to spend money to make money, or more money to make more money. Doesn't really work.
No, and we've and that is a message that we consistently find. On the N rates, for example, we do find that if you increase N rates, that you do increase profitability. If you do a tillage pass, you do have a higher yield than if you don't do a tillage pass on average in our results. But it doesn't cover the cost of doing the pass. So, an emphasis on returns rather than yields is what we need to be seeing, particularly in this high cost, low price environment.
Just for clarification's point, you said if you increase in rate, you do increase profitability. You meant you increase yield.
Yeah. That's a bad mistake, Todd. You're right. If you do increase N rates above that MRTN, you sometimes, and that is a key, sometimes increase yields but you don't increase profitability. And that makes sense. That N rate calculator was built around profitability. So, Yeah,
and one other note about the N-rate calculator, that's total pounds of N. That's not what you're putting on with the anhydrous bar exactly. It is every pound of N that is applied across the whole of the growing season.
That's exactly right. So that would include the N in DAP and MAP and applications typically in the fall, plus what you put on in the anhydrous bar, plus many farmers also put a little bit of a nitrogen on as they're spraying. So all of those things add up.
All right, and that's just the key takeaway. It really is 11 years of data. That's what it shows you. In the PCM world, what's kind of the range or split percentage-wise of how many people are doing each of those kinds of functions?
Yeah, that's we show these slides actually in here. But what we're seeing over time is a growth in our sample of no-till and one-pass light. We're seeing those heavier tillage systems go down. We see strip till increasing, particularly in corn. The issue with strip till is if we, in our sample, a PCM, what we see with strip till is that some of the farms are putting on a lot of other inputs. And if you do that, you take away from the strip till profitability. Strip till typically has a bit higher yields than no-till. So it's a viable system, but you can't be maximizing inputs in the other area to keep it profitable. The other thing we notice about strip till is that there's some do a pass in the fall and then a freshening in the spring, and that isn't profitable by our look either.
Probably not quite as expensive as doing full tillage, but still running across the field.
Yeah, it's almost, we charge a pretty hefty price for a strip till bar, and yeah, it's, I mean, you're doing the same thing as a tillage bar. Plus, if you're applying nitrogen, that's a relatively, or fertilizer, that's a relatively expensive piece of equipment.
One last item. What is a light tillage pass? Is that a disc? What are people generally doing?
Yeah, so light tillage passes would be something like a disc, vertical tillage. What gets away from being a light tillage is really heavy combination tools, where you see disc up front, field cultivator in back, rolling basket, and maybe a drag. And actually, you do, when you observe that, you see that not much is left of the trash. So, yeah.
Thank you much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again soon enough.
Yeah, thanks, Todd, for having me.
Gary Schnitke, of course, is with University of Illinois, an agricultural economist. He and Laura Gentry from the Illinois Corn Growers Association, along with myself, were on a webinar earlier today looking at all this information. You can catch it online. It's easy enough to find, really, just by going to youtube.com/@farmdoc. Let's turn our attention now to the global growing regions. Mike Tenura is here. He's the CEO and president at T-Storm Weather in Naperville, Illinois. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. Thanks again for having me. It's always a pleasure being on your show.
Now, we had quite a bit of rainfall here. I think much of the Midwest did. How did you actually fare? Because it was rocking, as best I can tell, to the north of us. In fact, my daughter was coming out of Chicago about that time, and even the Amtrak stayed in the station.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty intense storm. It started up late yesterday afternoon and hit here around 3:30. And locally in Naperville, there were a lot of trees knocked down, including two of mine. And my neighbor had a tree on their house, or still does. So it really whipped when it came through. And we had about an inch of rain by the time it all was said and done, not just between that, but also just a lot of storminess last night after it all was over. So, and Todd, that storm affected a lot of the corn in Illinois, as well as Iowa and Missouri. A pretty big swath of rain fell over the last 24 hours, not only between that, but what happened last night with a secondary area of rain, and then also another area of rain that moved across parts of Iowa and Missouri earlier today. So in the end, we saw about 1 to 3 inches from southern Iowa through central and northern Illinois over the 24 hours ending this morning. And we even saw some totals that exceeded 4 inches in parts of that region. And a few counties in northeast Missouri saw 5 to 7 inches. And that was verified by a combination of looking at the radar and then actual observations from different airports. So a pretty major rain event. We have more storms on the way today. And then things will quiet down a little bit. But I think, Todd, the bigger point to take home about all of this is that rain event and the ones that we've seen earlier this month and starting as recently as late May have really moistened things up across the corn and the spring wheat belt, for that matter. There's very little corn or spring wheat that's currently dry, and that's a big change from where we were sitting 30 days ago.
Give me some more details about this next 24-hour period. I know what you told us we got in the last 24 hours. What do you think the next 24 hours look like?
Well, it looks like about half of an inch to 1.5 inches across the southeast half of U.S. corn and soybeans, and that's as a weak cool front moves through. As we get into this weekend, though, another cool front moves through, and that one will be a lot stronger. And that's going to produce another round of rain for the southeast half to two-thirds of corn and soybeans. So in the end, Todd, there's not going to be very many corn or soybeans that are too dry by the time we get into Sunday. And temperatures will be a lot different this weekend than where they have been. That cool front will drop temperatures by 10 to 20, maybe even 30 degrees in some areas. And so we'll see highs only in the 60s, 70s, and 80s across the Corn Belt this weekend and early next week. So it's a real big change from where we've been. And we don't think it's going to last. That's the one thing we should note, because after that cool spell goes away around Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, it will turn a lot warmer. But Todd, with warm weather in June, with the type of rains that we've seen lately and a pretty strong jet stream across the northern U.S., we think that's simply going to lead to more thunderstorm clusters 1 to 2 weeks out.
Turn your attention to Europe and Ukraine, Russia. Talk about the wheat crops in each of those regions.
Well, most of them have been getting some pretty nice rains in recent weeks and months. That's especially true across Russia and into Ukraine, which is where a lot of the wheat exports from the world come from. As you start to head west, it's been pretty good across most of Europe as well, but things are changing. An upper-level high is going to develop this weekend across France, and that will then expand across Western Europe as we move into next week. A pretty major heat wave is ahead for France, Italy, and Spain, and that includes some wheat and even more of corn across Europe. So that'll be something to watch as we move through next week, with declining conditions for both corn and wheat in at least parts of Europe as we move through next week. But with the overall scope of the impact of that event less than it might be in a normal situation, just because we're seeing so much rain for corn and wheat across the United States, and we're still going to see rains in Eastern Europe and Russia and Ukraine. So it'll be more of a localized problem than a widespread global one.
Thanks for keeping us up to date on all of it. I do appreciate it.
Sure thing, Todd. We'll chat next week.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather, T-Storm Online in Naperville, Illinois at tstorm.net. He joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Do remember, we'll record our Commodity Week program this afternoon, post it to the website by about 6 o'clock tonight. It'll be up online there at willag.org. And then tomorrow you can hear it in its entirety during this hour on our home station. And many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend as well. Commodity Week is our weekly look at the world of agriculture. Thanks for joining us today here at Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.